Captain. Adolin walked up, taking Dalinar by the arm, and speaking in a hushed tone that was not so soft that Kaladin couldn't hear. We barely know him.
We have to trust some people, Adolin, his father said in a normal voice. If there's one person in this army I can guarantee isn't working for Sadeas, it's that soldier.
He turned and glanced at Kaladin, once again studying him with those unfathomable eyes. He didn't see me with the stormlight, Kaladin told himself forcefully. He was practically unconscious. He doesn't know.
Does he?
Adolin threw up his hands but walked to the other side of the room, muttering something to his brother. Kaladin remained in position, standing comfortably at parade rest. Yes, definitely spoiled. The general who arrived soon after was a limber, bald man with a straight back and pale yellow eyes. His wife, Tishav, had a pinched face and hair streaked blonde. She took up position by the writing desk, which Navani had made no move to occupy.
Reports,
Dalinar said from the window as the door clicked shut behind the two newcomers.
I suspect you know what you'll hear, Bright Lord, said Tishav. They're irate. They sincerely hoped you would reconsider the command, and sending it out to the public has provoked them. High Prince Hatham was the only one to make a public announcement. He plans to, and I quote, see that the king is dissuaded from this reckless and ill-advised course.
The king sighed, settling into his seat. Renarin sat down immediately, as did the general. Adolin found his seat more reluctantly. Dalinar remained standing, looking out the window.
Uncle? The king asked. Did you hear that reaction? It's a good thing you didn't go so far as you had considered, to proclaim that they must follow the codes or face seizure of assets. We'd be in the middle of a rebellion.
That will come, Dalinar said. I still wonder if I should have announced it all at once. When you've got an arrow stuck in you, it's sometimes best to just yank it out in one pull.
Actually, when you had an arrow in you, the best thing to do was leave it there until you could find a surgeon. Often it would plug the blood flow and keep you alive. It was probably best not to speak up and undermine the High Prince's metaphor, however.
Storms! What a ghastly image, the king said, wiping his face with a handkerchief. Do you have to say such things, Uncle? I already fear we'll be dead before the week is out.
Your father and I survived worse than this, Dalinar said.
You had allies then. 3 high princes for you, only 6 against, and you never fought them all at the same time.
If the high princes unite against us, General Call said, we will not be able to stand firm. We'll have no choice but to rescind this proclamation, which will weaken the throne considerably.
The king leaned back, hand to his forehead.
Cesareza, this is going to be a disaster!
Kaladin raised an eyebrow.
You disagree?
Syl asked, moving over toward him as a cluster of fluttering leaves. It was disconcerting to hear her voice coming from such shapes. The others in the room, of course, couldn't see or hear her.
No, Kaladin whispered. This proclamation sounds like a real tempest. I just expected the king to be less, well, whiny.
We need to secure allies, Adolin said. Form a coalition. Sadeas will gather one, and so we counter him with our own.
Dividing the kingdom into 2, Tishav said, shaking her head. I don't see how a civil war would serve the throne, particularly one we're unlikely to win.
This could be the end of Alethkar as a kingdom, the general agreed.
Alethkar ended as a kingdom centuries ago, Dalinar said softly, staring out that window. This thing we have created is not Alethkar. Alethkar was justice. We are children wearing our father's cloak.
But uncle, the king said, at least the kingdom is something, more than it has been in centuries. If we fail here and fracture to 10 warring princedoms, it will negate everything my father worked for.
This isn't what your father worked for, son, Dalinar said. This game on the shattered plains, this nauseating political farce, this isn't what Gavilar envisioned. The Everstorm comes.
What?
The king asked. Dalinar turned from the window finally, walking to the others, and rested his hand on Navani's shoulder.
We're going to find a way to do this, or we're going to destroy the kingdom in the process. I won't suffer this charade any longer.
Kaladin, arms folded, tapped one finger against his elbow.
Dalinar acts like he's the king, he mouthed, whispering so softly only Syl could hear. And everyone else does as well.
Troubling. It was like what Amaram had done, seizing the power he saw before him, even if it wasn't his. Navani looked up at Dalinar, raising her hand to rest on his. She was in on whatever he was planning, judging by that expression. The king wasn't. He sighed lightly.
You've obviously got a plan, Uncle. Well, out with it. This drama is tiring.
What I really want to do, Dalinar said frankly, is beat the lot of them senseless. That's what I'd do to new recruits who weren't willing to obey orders.
I think you'll have a hard time spanking obedience into the High Prince's uncle, the king said dryly.
For some reason, he absently rubbed at his chest.
You need to disarm them, Kaladin found himself saying.
All eyes in the room turned toward him. Brightness Tashav gave him a frown, as if speaking were not Kaladin's right. It probably wasn't. Dalinar, however, nodded toward him.
Soldier, you have a suggestion?
Your pardon, sir, Kaladin said.
And your pardon, your majesty.
But if a squad is giving you trouble, the first thing you do is separate its members. Split them up, stick them in better squads. I don't think you can do that here.
I don't know how we'd break apart the High Princes, Dalinar said. I doubt I could stop them from associating with one another. Perhaps if this war were won, I could assign different High Princes different duties, send them off, then work on them individually. But for the time being, we are trapped here.
Well, the second thing you do to troublemakers, Kaladin said, is to disarm them. They're easier to control if you make them turn in their spears. It's embarrassing, makes them feel like recruits again.
So, can you take their troops away from them, maybe?
We can't, I'm afraid, Dalinar said.
The soldiers swore allegiance to their light eyes, not to the crown specifically. It's only the High Princes who have sworn to the crown.
However, you are thinking along the right lines.
He squeezed Navani's shoulder.
For the last 2 weeks, he said, I've been trying to decide how to approach this problem. My gut tells me that I need to treat the High Princes, the entire light-eyed population of Alethkar, like new recruits in need of discipline.
He came to me and we talked, Navani said. We can't actually bust the High Princes down to a manageable rank, as much as Dalinar would like to do just that. Instead, we need to lead them to believe that we're going to take it all from them if they don't shape up.
This proclamation will make them mad, Dalinar said. I want them mad. I want them to think about the war, their place here. And I want to remind them of Gavilar's assassination. If I can push them to act more like soldiers, even if it starts with them taking up arms against me, then I might be able to persuade them. I can reason with soldiers. Regardless, a big part of this will involve the threat that I'm going to take away their authority and power if they don't use it correctly. And that begins, as Captain Kaladin suggested, with disarming them.
Disarm the High Princes? The king asked. What foolishness is this?
It's not foolishness, Dalinar said, smiling. We can't take their armies from them, but we can do something else. Adolin, I intend to take the lock off your scabbard.
Adolin frowned, considering that for a moment. Then a wide grin split his face.
You mean letting me duel again? For real?
Yes,
Dalinar said. He turned to the king.
For the longest time, I've forbidden him from important bouts, as the codes prohibit duels of honor between officers at war. More and more, however, I've come to realize that the others don't see themselves as being at war. They're playing a game. It's time to allow Adolin to duel the camp's other shardbearers in official bouts.
So we can humiliate them? The king asked.
It wouldn't be about humiliation. It would be about depriving them of their shards.
Dalinar stepped into the middle of the group of chairs.
The High Princes would have a hard time fighting against us if we controlled all of the shard blades and shard plate in the army. Adolin, I want you to challenge the shard bearers of other High Princes in duels of honor, the prizes being the shards themselves.
They won't agree, General Call said. They'll refuse the bouts.
We'll have to make sure they agree, Dalinar said. Find a way to force them or shame them into the fights. I've considered that this would probably be easier if we could ever track down where Wit ran off to.
What happens if the lad loses? General Call asked. This plan seems too unpredictable.
We'll see, Dalinar said. This is only one part of what we will do. The smaller part, but also the most visible part. Adolin, everyone tells me how good you are at dueling, and you have pestered me incessantly to relax my prohibition. There are 30 shard-bearers in the army, not counting our own. Can you defeat that many men?
Can I? Adolin said, grinning. I'll do it without breaking a sweat, so long as I can start with Sadeus himself.
So he's spoiled and cocky, Kaladin thought.
No, Dalinar said. Sadeus won't accept a personal challenge, though eventually bringing him down is our goal. We start with some of the lesser shard-bearers and work up.
The others in the room seemed troubled. That included Brightness Navani, who drew her lips to a line and glanced at Adolin. She might be in on Dalinar's plan, but she didn't love the idea of her nephew dueling. She didn't say so.
As Dalinar indicated, Navani said, this won't be our entire plan. Hopefully, Adolin's duels won't need to go far. They are meant mostly to inspire worry and fear, to apply pressure to some factions who are working against us. The greater part of what we must do will entail a complex and determined political effort to connect with those who can be swayed to our side.
Navani and I will work to persuade the High Princes of the advantages of a truly unified Alethkar, Dalinar said, nodding. Though the Stormfather knows I'm less certain of my political acumen than Adolin is of his dueling. It is what must be. If Adolin is to be the stick, I must be the feather.
There will be assassins, Uncle,
Elokar said, sounding tired.
I don't think Kahl is right. I don't think Alethkar will shatter immediately. The High Princes have come to like the idea of being one kingdom. But they also like their sport, their fun, their gem hearts. So they will send assassins, quietly at first, and probably not directly at you or me. Our families. Sadeus and the others will try to hurt us, make us back down. Are you willing to risk your sons on this? How about my mother?
Yes, you are right, Dalinar said. I hadn't, but yes, that is how they think.
He sounded regretful to Kaladin.
And you're still willing to go through with this plan? The king asked.
I have no choice, Dalinar said, turning away, walking back toward the window,
looking out westward, in toward the continent.
Then at least tell me this, Elokar said. What is your end game, Uncle? What is it you want out of all of this? In a year, if we survive this fiasco, what do you want us to be?
Dalinar put his hands on the thick stone windowsill. He stared out as if at something he could see, and the rest of them could not.
I'll have us be what we were before, son. A kingdom that can stand through storms. A kingdom that is a light and not a darkness. I will have a truly unified Alethkar, with high princes who are loyal and just. I'll have more than that. He tapped the windowsill. I'm going to refound the Knights Radiant.
Kaladin nearly dropped his spear in shock. Fortunately, nobody was watching him. They were leaping to their feet, staring at Dalinar.
The Radiance? Brightness Tashav demanded. Are you mad? You're going to try to rebuild a sect of traitors who gave us over to the Voidbringers?
The rest of this sounds good, Father, Adolin said, stepping forward. I know you think about the Radiance a lot, but you see them differently than everyone else. It won't go well if you announce that you want to emulate them.
The king just groaned, burying his face in his hands.
People are wrong about them, Dalinar said. And even if they are not, the original Radiance, the ones instituted by the Heralds, are something even the Vorin Church admits were once moral and just. We'll need to remind people that the Knights Radiant, as an order, stood for something grand. If they hadn't, then they wouldn't have been able to fall, as the stories claim they did.
But why? Elokar asked. What is the point?
It is what I must do. Dalinar hesitated. I'm not completely certain why yet, only that I've been instructed to do it. As a protection, and a preparation for what is coming. A storm of some sort. Perhaps it is as simple as the other High Princes turning against us. I doubt that, but perhaps. Father, Adolin said, hand on Dalinar's arm. This is all well and good, and maybe you can change people's perception of the Radiance, but...
Ishar's soul, Father. They could do things we cannot. Simply naming someone a Radiant won't give them fanciful powers like in the stories.
The Radiants were about more than what they could do, Dalinar said. They were about an ideal, the kind of ideal we're lacking these days. We may not be able to reach for the ancient surge bindings, the powers they had, but we can seek to emulate the Radiance in other ways. I am set on this. Do not try to dissuade me.
The others did not seem convinced. Kaladin narrowed his eyes. So did Dalinar know about Kaladin's powers, or didn't he? The meeting moved on to more mundane topics, such as how to maneuver shardbearers into facing Adolin, and how to step up patrols of the surrounding area. Dalinar considered making the war camps safe to be a prerequisite for what he was attempting. When the meeting finally ended, most people inside departing to carry out orders, Kaladin was still considering what Dalinar had said about the Radiance. The man hadn't realized it, but he'd been very accurate. The Knights Radiant did have ideals, and they'd called them that very thing. The Five Ideals. The immortal words. Life before death, Kaladin thought, playing with the sphere he'd pulled from his pocket. Strength before weakness. Journey before destination. Those words made up the first ideal in its entirety. He had only an inkling of what it meant, but his ignorance hadn't stopped him from figuring out the second ideal of the Windrunners, the oath to protect those who could not protect themselves. Syl wouldn't tell him the other three. She said he would know them when he needed to. Or he wouldn't, and would not progress. Did he want to progress? To become what? A member of the Knights Radiant? Kaladin hadn't asked for someone else's ideals to rule his life. He just wanted to survive. Now, somehow, he was headed straight down a path that no man had trod in centuries, potentially becoming something that people across Roshar would hate or revere. So much attention. Soldier? Dalinar asked, stopping by the door. Sir, Kaladin stood up straight again and saluted. It felt good to do that, to stand at attention, to find a place. He wasn't certain if it was the good feeling of remembering a life he'd once loved, or if it was the pathetic feeling of an axe-hound finding its leash again. My nephew was right, Dalinar said, watching the king retreat down the hallway. The others might try to hurt my family. It's how they think. I'm going to need guard details on Navani and my sons at all times. Your best men.
I've got about 24 of those, sir, Kaladin said. That's not enough for full guard details running all day protecting all four of you. I should have more men trained before too long, but putting a spear in the hands of a bridgeman does not make him a soldier, let alone a good bodyguard.
Dalinar nodded, looking troubled. He rubbed his chin.
Sir? Your force isn't the only one stretched thin in this war camp, soldier, Dalinar said. I lost a lot of men to Sarius's betrayal. Very good men. Now I have a deadline. Just over 60 days.
Kaladin felt a chill. The High Prince was taking the number found scrawled on his wall very seriously.
Captain, Dalinar said softly, I need every able-bodied man I can get. I need to be training them, rebuilding my army, preparing for the storm. I need them assaulting plateaus, clashing with the Parshendi, to get battle experience.
What did that have to do with him?
You promised that my men wouldn't be required to fight on plateau runs.
I'll keep that promise, Dalinar said.
But there are 250 soldiers in the King's Guard. They include some of my last remaining battle-ready officers, and I will need to put them in charge of new recruits.
I'm not just going to have to watch over your family, am I? Kaladin asked, feeling a new weight settling in his shoulders. You're implying you want to turn over guarding the king to me as well.
Yes, Dalinar said. Slowly, but yes. I need those soldiers. Beyond that, maintaining two separate guard forces seems like a mistake to me. I feel that your men, considering your background, are the least likely to include spies for my enemies. You should know that a while back there may have been an attempt on the king's life. I still haven't figured out who was behind it, but I worry that some of his guards may have been involved.
Kaladin took a deep breath. What happened?
Elikar and I hunted a chasm fiend, Dalinar said. During that hunt, at a time of stress, the king's plate came close to failing. We found that many of the gemstones powering it had likely been replaced with ones that were flawed, making them crack under stress.
I don't know much of plate, sir, Kaladin said. Could they have just broken on their own, without sabotage?
Possibly, but unlikely. I want your men to take shifts guarding the palace and the king, alternating with some of the king's guard to get you familiar with him and the palace. It might also help your men learn from the more experienced guards. At the same time, I'm going to start siphoning off the officers from his guard to train soldiers in my army. Over the next few weeks, we'll merge your group and the King's Guard into one. You'll be in charge. Once you've trained bridgemen from those other crews well enough, we'll replace soldiers in the guard with your men and move the soldiers to my army.
He looked Kaladin in the eyes.
Can you do this, soldier?
Yes, sir,
Kaladin said, though part of him was panicking.
I can.
Good.
Sir, a suggestion? You've said you're going to expand patrols outside the war camps, trying to police the hills around the Shattered Plains?
Yes.
The number of bandits out there is embarrassing. This is Alethi land now. It needs to follow Alethi laws.
I have 1,000 men I need to train, Kaladin said. If I could patrol them out there, it might help them feel like soldiers. I could use a large enough force that it sends a message to the bandits, maybe making them withdraw. But my men won't need to see much combat.
Good. General Call had been in command of patrol duty, but he's now my most senior commander and will be needed for other things. Train your men. Our goal will eventually be to have your 1,000 doing real roadway patrols between here, Alethkar, and the ports to the south and east. I'll want scouting teams, watching for signs of bandit camps and searching out caravans that have been attacked. I need numbers on how much activity is out there and just how dangerous it is.
I'll see to it personally, sir. Storms. How is he going to do all of this?
Good,
Dalinar said. Dalinar walked from the chamber, clasping his hands behind him as if lost in thought. Moash, Eth, and Mart fell in after him, as ordered by Kaladin. He'd have 2 men with Dalinar at all times, 3 if he could manage it. He'd once hoped to expand that to 4 or 5, but storms, with so many to watch over now, that was going to be impossible.
Who is this man?
Kaladin thought, watching Dalinar's retreating form. He ran a good camp. You can judge a man, and Kaladin did, by the men who followed him. But a tyrant could have a good camp with disciplined soldiers. This man, Dalinar Kolin, had helped unite Alethkar, and had done so by wading through blood. Now he spoke like a king even when the king himself was in the room.
He wants to rebuild the Knights Radiant, Kaladin thought.
That wasn't something Dalinar Kolin could accomplish through simple force of will. Unless he had help.
6. Terrible Destruction. We had never considered that there might be Parshendi spies hiding among our slaves. This is something else I should have seen. From the Journal of Navani Kolin, Yesasan, 1174. Shallan sat again on her box on the ship's deck, though she now wore a hat on her head, a coat over her dress, and a glove on her free hand. Her safe hand was, of course, pinned inside its sleeve. The chill out here on the open ocean was something unreal. The captain said that far to the south, the ocean itself actually froze. That sounded incredible. She'd like to see it. She'd occasionally seen snow and ice in Yarkoved during the odd winter, but an entire ocean of it? Amazing. She wrote with gloved fingers as she observed the spren she'd named Pattern. At the moment, he had lifted himself up off the surface of the deck, forming a ball of swirling blackness, infinite lines that twisted in ways she could never have captured on the flat page. Instead, she wrote descriptions, supplemented with sketches. "Food," Pattern said. The sound had a buzzing quality, and he vibrated when he spoke. "Yes," Shallan said. "We eat it." She selected a small lima fruit from the bowl beside her and placed it in her mouth, then chewed and swallowed.
"Eat," Pattern said. "You make it into you."
"Yes, exactly." He dropped down, the darkness vanishing as he entered the wooden deck of the ship. Once again, he became part of the material, making the wood ripple as if it were water. He slid across the floor, then moved up the box beside her to the bowl of small green fruits. Here he moved across them, each fruit's rind puckering and rising with the shape of his pattern.
"Terrible," he said, the sound vibrating up from the bowl.
"Terrible?"
"Destruction."
"What? No, it's how we survive. Everything needs to eat."
"Terrible destruction to eat."
He sounded aghast. He retreated from the bowl to the deck. "Pattern connects increasingly complex thoughts," Shallan wrote. "Abstractions come easily to him. Early he asked me the questions, why you, why be? I interpreted this as asking me my purpose. When I replied, to find truth, he easily seemed to grasp my meaning. And yet, some simple realities, such as why people would need to eat, completely escape him. She stopped writing as the paper puckered and rose, Pattern appearing on the sheet itself, his tiny ridges lifting the letters she had just penned.
"Why this?" he asked.
"To remember."
"Remember," he said,
trying the word. "It means..." Stormfather, how did she explain memory? "It means to be able to know what you did in the past, in other moments, ones that happened days ago."
"Remember," he said. "I cannot remember."
"What is the first thing you do remember?" Shallan asked. "Where were you first?"
"First," Pattern said. "With you."
"On the ship?" Shallan said, writing.
"No. Green food. Food not eaten."
"Plants?" Shallan asked.
"Yes. Many plants."
He vibrated, and she thought she could hear in that vibration the blowing of wind through branches. Shallan breathed in. She could almost see it. The deck in front of her changing to a dirt path, her box becoming a stone bench. Faintly. Not really there, but almost. Her father's gardens. Pattern on the ground, drawn in the dust.
"Remember,"
Pattern said, voice like a whisper. "No," Shallan thought, horrified. "No!" The image vanished. It hadn't really been there in the first place, had it? She raised a safe hand to her breast, breathing in and out in sharp gasps. "No."
"Hey, young knees,"
Yalb said from behind.
"Tell the new kid here what happened in Car Bronze."
Shallan turned, heart still racing, to see Yalb walking over with the new kid, a 6-foot-tall hulk of a man who was at least 5 years Yalb's senior. They'd picked him up at Amid Latin, the last port. Tozbek wanted to be sure they wouldn't be undermanned during the last leg to New Natanan. Yalb squatted down beside her stool. In the face of the chill, he'd acquiesced to wearing a shirt with ragged sleeves and a kind of headband that wrapped over his ears.
"Brightness," Yalb asked. "You all right? You look like you swallowed a turtle. And not just the head, neither."
"I'm well," Shallan said. What was it you wanted of me again?"
"In Car Bronze,"
Yalb said, thumbing over his shoulder.
"Did we, or did we not meet the king?"
"We?" Shallan asked. "I met him."
"And I was your retinue."
"You were waiting outside."
"Doesn't matter none,"
Yalb said.
"I was your footman for that meeting, eh?"
"Footman?" He'd led her up to the palace as a favor. "I guess," she said. "You did have a nice bow, as I recall."
"See?"
Yalb said, standing and confronting the much larger man.
"I mentioned the bow, didn't I?"
The new kid rumbled his agreement.
"So get to washing those dishes,"
Yalb said. He got a scowl in response.
"Now, don't give me that," Yalb said. "I told you, galley duty is something the captain watches closely. If you want to fit in around here, you do it well and do some extra. It will put you ahead with the captain and the rest of the men. I'm giving you quite the opportunity here, and I'll have you appreciate it."
That seemed to placate the larger man, who turned around and went tromping toward the lower decks.
"Passions,"
Yalb said.
"That fellow is as done as 2 spheres made of mud. I worry about him. Somebody's going to take advantage of him, Brightness."
"Yalb, have you been boasting again?" Shallan said.
"'Tain't boasting if some of it's true."
"Actually, that's exactly what boasting entails."
"Hey,"
Yalb said, turning toward her.
"What were you doing before?" "You know, with the colors."
"Colors?" Shallan said, suddenly cold.
"Yeah. The deck turned green, eh?"
Yalb said.
"I swear I saw it. Has to do with that strange spren, does it?"
I'm trying to determine exactly what kind of spren it is," Shallan said, keeping her voice even. "It's a scholarly matter."
"I thought so,"
Yalb said, though she'd given him nothing in the way of an answer. He raised an affable hand to her, then jogged off. She worried about letting them see Pattern. She'd tried staying in her cabin to keep him a secret from the men, but being cooped up had been too difficult for her, and he didn't respond to her suggestions that he stay out of their sight. So during the last 4 days, she'd been forced to let them see what she was doing as she studied him. They were understandably discomforted by him, but didn't say much. Today they were getting the ship ready to sail all night. Thoughts of the open sea at night unsettled her, but that was the cost of sailing this far from civilization.
2 days back, they'd even been forced to weather a storm in a cove along the coast. Yasna and Shallan had gone ashore to stay in a fortress maintained for the purpose, paying a steep cost to get in, while the sailors had stayed on board. That cove, though not a true port, had at least had a storm wall to help shelter the ship. Next high storm, they wouldn't even have that. They'd find a cove and try to ride out the winds, though Tazbek said he'd send Shallan and Yasna ashore to seek shelter in a cavern. She turned back to Pattern, who had shifted into his hovering form. He looked something like the pattern of splintered light thrown on the wall by a crystal chandelier, except he was made of something black instead of light, and he was three-dimensional. So, maybe not much like that at all.
Lies, Pattern said. Lies from the Yalb.
Yes, Shallan said with a sigh. Yalb is far too skilled at persuasion for his own good sometimes. Pattern hummed softly. He seemed pleased. You like lies? Shallan asked.
Good lies, Pattern said. That lie, good lie.
What makes a lie good? Shallan asked, taking careful notes, recording Pattern's exact words.
True lies.
Pattern, those two are opposites.
Light makes shadow. Truth makes lies.
Liespren, Yasna called them, Shallan wrote. A moniker they don't like, apparently. When I soulcast for the first time, a voice demanded a truth from me. I still don't know what that means, and Yasna has not been forthcoming. She doesn't seem to know what to make of my experience either. I do not think that voice belonged to Pattern, but I cannot say, as he seems to have forgotten much about himself. She returned to making a few sketches of Pattern, both in his floating and flattened forms. Drawing let her mind relax. By the time she was done, there were several half-remembered passages from her research that she wanted to quote in her notes. She made her way down the steps below decks, Pattern following. He drew looks from the sailors. Sailors were a superstitious lot, and some took him as a bad sign. In her quarters, Pattern moved up the wall beside her, watching without eyes as she searched for a passage she remembered, which mentioned Spren that spoke. Not just Windspren and Riverspren, which would mimic people and make playful comments. Those were a step up from ordinary Spren, but there was yet another level of Spren, one rarely seen, Spren-like Pattern, who had real conversations with people. The Night Watcher is obviously one of these, Elay wrote, Shallan copying the passage. The records of conversations with her, and she is definitely female, despite what rural Alethi folktales would have one believe, are numerous and credible. Shubelai herself, intent on providing a first-hand scholarly report, visited the Night Watcher and recorded her story word for word. Shallan went to another reference and before long got completely lost in her studies. A few hours later, she closed a book and set it on the table beside her bed. Her spheres were getting dim. They'd go out soon and would need to be reinfused with stormlight. Shallan released a contented sigh and leaned back against her bed, her notes from a dozen different sources laid out on the floor of her small chamber. She felt satisfied. Her brothers loved the plan of fixing the soulcaster and returning it, and seemed energized by her suggestion that all was not lost. They thought they could last longer now that a plan was in place. Shallan's life was coming together. How long had it been since she'd just been able to sit and read, without worried concern for her house, without dreading the need to find a way to steal from Yasna? Even before the terrible sequence of events that had led to her father's death, she had always been anxious. That had been her life. She'd seen becoming a true scholar as something unreachable. Stormfather. She'd seen the next town over as being unreachable. She stood up, gathering her sketchbook and flipping through her pictures of the Samthid, including several drawn from the memory of her dip in the ocean. She smiled at that, recalling how she'd climbed back up on deck, dripping wet and grinning. The sailors had all obviously thought her mad. Now she was sailing toward a city on the edge of the world, betrothed to a powerful Alethi prince, and was free to just learn. She was seeing incredible new sights, sketching them during the days, then reading through piles of books in the nights. She had stumbled into the perfect life, and it was everything she'd wished for. Shallan fished in the pocket inside her safe-hand sleeve, digging out some more spheres to replace those dimming in the goblet. The ones her hand emerged with, however, were completely done. Not a glimmer of light in them. She frowned. These had been restored during the previous high storm, held in a basket tied to the ship's mast. The ones in her goblet were two storms old now, which was why they were running out. How had the ones in her pocket gone done faster? It defied reason. Pattern said from the wall near her head. Lies. Shallan replaced the spheres in her pocket, then opened the door into the ship's narrow companionway and moved to Yasna's cabin. It was the cabin that Tozbek and his wife usually shared, but they had vacated it for the third and smallest of the cabins to give Yasna the better quarters. People did things like that for her, even when she didn't ask. Yasna would have some spheres for Shallan to use. Indeed, Yasna's door was cracked open, swaying slightly as the ship creaked and rocked along its evening path. Yasna sat at the desk inside, and Shallan peeked in, suddenly uncertain if she wanted to bother the woman. She could see Yasna's face, hand against her temple, staring at the pages spread before her. Yasna's eyes were haunted, her expression haggard. This was not the Yasna that Shallan was accustomed to seeing. The confidence had been overwhelmed by exhaustion, the poise replaced by worry. Yasna started to write something, but stopped after just a few words. She set down the pen, closing her eyes and massaging her temples. A few dizzy-looking spren like jets of dust rising into the air appeared around Yasna's head. Exhaustion spren. Shallan pulled back, suddenly feeling as if she'd intruded upon an intimate moment. Yasna with her defenses down. Shallan began to creep away, but a voice from the floor suddenly said, "Truth." Startled, Yasna looked up, eyes finding Shallan, who of course blushed furiously. Yasna turned her eyes down toward Pattern on the floor, then reset her mask, sitting up with proper posture. "Yes, child?" I needed spheres," Shallan said. "Those in my pouch went done." "Have you been soul-casting?" Yasna asked sharply. "What? No, Brightness. I promised I would not." "Then it is the second ability," Yasna said. "Come in and close that door. I should speak to Captain Tozbek. It won't latch properly." Shallan stepped in, pushing the door closed, though the latch didn't catch. She stepped forward, hands clasped, feeling embarrassed. "What did you do?" Yasna asked. "It involved light, I assume."
"I seemed to make plants appear," Shallan said.
"Well, really just the color. One of the sailors saw the deck turn green, but it vanished when I stopped thinking about the plants."
"Yes," Yasna said. She flipped through one of her books, stopping at an illustration. Shallan had seen it before. It was as ancient as Voronism. 10 spheres connected by lines forming a shape like an hourglass on its side, Two of the spheres at the center almost looked like pupils. The double eye of the Almighty. 10 essences, Yasna said softly. She ran her fingers along the page. 10 surges, 10 orders. But what does it mean that the Spren have finally decided to return the oaths to us? And how much time remains to me? Not long. Not long. Brightness? Shallan asked. Before your arrival, I could assume I was an anomaly, Yasna said. I could hope that surge bindings were not returning in large numbers. I no longer have that hope. The cryptics sent you to me, of that I have no doubt, because they knew you would need training. That gives me hope that I was at least one of the first. I don't understand. Yasna looked up toward Shallan, meeting her eyes with an intense gaze. The woman's eyes were reddened with fatigue. How late was she working? Every night when Shallan turned in, there was still light coming from under Yasna's door. To be honest, Yasna said, I don't understand either. Are you all right? Shallan asked. Before I entered, you seemed distressed. Yasna hesitated just briefly. I have merely been spending too long at my studies. She turned to one of her trunks, digging out a dark cloth pouch filled with spheres. Take these. I would suggest that you keep spheres with you at all times, so that your surge binding has the opportunity to manifest. Can you teach me? Shallan asked, taking the pouch. I don't know, Yasna said. I will try. On this diagram, one of the surges is known as illumination, the mastery of light. For now, I would prefer you expend your efforts on learning this surge as opposed to soul casting. That is a dangerous art, more so now than it once was. Shallan nodded, rising. She hesitated before leaving, however. Are you sure you are well? Of course. She said it too quickly. The woman was poised, in control, but also obviously exhausted. The mask was cracked, and Shallan could see the truth. She's trying to placate me, Shallan realized. Pat me on the head and send me back to bed like a child awakened by a nightmare. You're worried, Shallan said, meeting Yasna's eyes. The woman turned away. She pushed a book over something wiggling on her table. A small purple Spren. Fear Spren. Only one, true, but still. No, Shallan whispered. You're not worried. You're terrified. Stormfather. It is all right, Shallan, Yasna said. I just need some sleep. Go back to your studies. Shallan sat down on the stool beside Yasna's desk. The older woman looked back at her, and Shallan could see the mask cracking further. Annoyance as Yasna drew her lips to a line, tension in the way she held her pen in a fist. You told me I could be part of this, Shallan said. Yasna, if you're that worried about something... My worry is what it has always been, Yasna said, leaning back in her chair. That I will be too late. That I'm incapable of doing anything meaningful to stop what is coming. That I'm trying to stop a high storm by blowing against it really hard. The Voidbringers, Shallan said. The Parshmen. In the past, Yasna said. The desolation, the coming of the Voidbringers, was supposedly always marked by a return of the heralds to prepare mankind. They would train the knights radiant, who would experience a rush of new members. But we captured the Voidbringers, Shallan said, and enslaved them. That was what Yasna postulated, and Shallan agreed, having seen the research. So you think a kind of revolution is coming? That the Parshmen will turn against us, as they did in the past? Yes, Yasna said, rifling through her notes. And soon... Your proving to be a surge binder does not comfort me, as it smacks too much of what happened before. But back then, new knights had teachers to train them. Generations of tradition. We have nothing. The Voidbringers are captive, Shallan said, glancing toward Pattern. He rested on the floor, almost invisible, saying nothing. The Parshmen can barely communicate. How can they possibly stage a revolution? Yasna found the sheet of paper she'd been seeking and handed it to Shallan. Written in Yasna's own hand, it was an account by a captain's wife of a plateau assault on the Shattered Plains. Parshendi, Yasna said, can sing in time with one another no matter how far they've been separated. They have some ability to communicate that we do not understand. I can only assume that their cousins, the Parshmen, have the same. They may not need to hear a call to action in order to revolt. Shallan read the report, nodding slowly. We need to warn others, Yasna. You don't think I've tried? Yasna asked. I've written to scholars and kings all around the world. Most dismiss me as paranoid. The evidence you readily accept, others call flimsy. The Ardents were my best hope, but their eyes are clouded by the interference of the hierocracy. Besides, my personal beliefs make Ardents skeptical of anything I say. My mother wants to see my research, which is something. My brother and uncle might believe, and that is why we are going to them. She hesitated. There is another reason we seek the Shattered Plains. A way to find evidence that might convince everyone. Urethiru, Shallan said. The city you seek? Yasna gave her another curt glance. The ancient city was something Shallan had first learned about by secretly reading Yasna's notes. You still blush too easily when confronted, Yasna noted. I'm sorry. And apologize too easily as well. I'm indignant? Yasna smiled, picking up the representation of the double eye. She stared at it. There is a secret hidden somewhere on the Shattered Plains. A secret about Urethiru. You told me the city wasn't there. It isn't. But the path to it may be. Her lips tightened. According to legend, only a knight radiant could open the way. Fortunately, we know two of those. Again, you are not a radiant, and neither am I. Being able to replicate some of the things they could do may not matter. We don't have their traditions or knowledge. We're talking about the potential end of civilization itself, aren't we? Shallan asked softly. Yasna hesitated. The desolations, Shallan said. I know very little, but the legends. In the aftermath of each one, mankind was broken. Great cities in ashes, industry smashed. Each time, knowledge and growth were reduced to an almost prehistoric state. It took centuries of rebuilding to restore civilization to what it had been before. She hesitated. I keep hoping that I'm wrong. Urethiru, Shallan said. She tried to refrain from just asking questions, trying instead to reason her way to the answer. You said the city was a kind of base or home to the Knights Radiant. I hadn't heard of it before speaking with you, and so can guess that it's not commonly referred to in the literature. Perhaps then it is one of the things that the hierocracy suppressed knowledge of? Very good, Yasna said. Although I think that it had begun to fade into legend even before then, the hierocracy did not help. So, if it existed before the hierocracy and if the pathway to it was locked at the fall of the Radiance, then it might contain records that have not been touched by modern scholars. Unaltered, unchanged lore about the Voidbringers and Surgebinding. Shallan shivered. That's why we're really going to the Shattered Plains. Yasna smiled through her fatigue. Very good indeed. My time in the Palinaeum was very useful, but also in some ways disappointing. While I confirmed my suspicions about the Parshmen, I also found that many of the great library's records bore the same signs of tampering as others I'd read. This cleansing of history, removing direct references to Urethiru or the Radiants because they were embarrassments to Vornism, it's infuriating. And people ask me why I am hostile to the Church. I need primary sources. And then there are stories, ones I dare to believe, claiming that Urethiru was holy and protected from the Voidbringers. Maybe that was wishful fancy, but I am not too much a scholar to hope that something like that might be true. And the Parshmen? We will try to persuade the Alethi to rid themselves of those. Not an easy task. A nearly impossible one, Yasna said, standing. She began to pack her books away for the night, putting them in her waterproofed trunk. Parshmen are such perfect slaves. Docile, obedient. Our society has become far too reliant upon them. The Parshmen wouldn't need to turn violent to throw us into chaos, though I'm certain that is what's coming. They could simply walk away. It would cause an economic crisis. She closed the trunk after removing one volume, then turned back to Shallan. Convincing everyone of what I say is beyond us without more evidence. Even if my brother listens, he doesn't have the authority to force the High Princes to get rid of their Parshmen. And in all honesty, I fear my brother won't be brave enough to risk the collapse expelling the Parshmen might cause. But if they turn on us, the collapse will come anyway. Yes, Yasna said. You know this, and I know it. My mother might believe it. But the risk of being wrong is so immense that... Well, we will need evidence. Overwhelming and irrefutable evidence. So we find the city. At all costs. We find that city. Shallan nodded. I did not want to lay all of this upon your shoulders, child, Yasna said, sitting back down. However, I will admit that it is a relief to speak of these things to someone who doesn't challenge me on every other point. We'll do it, Yasna, Shallan said. We'll travel to the Shattered Plains and we'll find Urethiru. We'll get the evidence and convince everyone to listen. Ah, the optimism of youth, Yasna said. That is nice to hear on occasion, too. She handed the book to Shallan. Among the Knights Radiant there was an order known as the Light Weavers. I know precious little about them, but of all the sources I've read, this one has the most information. Shallan took the volume eagerly. Words of Radiance, the title read. Go, Yasna said. Read. Shallan glanced at her. I will sleep, Yasna promised, a smile creeping to her lips. And stop trying to mother me. I don't even let Navani do that. Shallan sighed, nodding, and left Yasna's quarters. Pattern tagged along behind. He'd spent the entire conversation silent. As she entered her cabin, she found herself much heavier of heart than when she'd left it. She couldn't banish the image of terror in Yasna's eyes. Yasna Kolin shouldn't fear anything, should she? Shallan crawled onto her cot with the book she'd been given and the pouch of spheres. Part of her was eager to begin, but she was exhausted, her eyelids drooping. It really had gotten late. If she started the book now... Perhaps better to get a good night's sleep, then dig refreshed into a new day's studies. She set the book on the small table beside her bed, curled up, and let the rocking of the boat coax her to sleep. She awoke to screams, shouts, and smoke. 7. Open Flame. I was unprepared for the grief my loss brought, like an unexpected rain, breaking from a clear sky and crashing down upon me. Gavilar's death years ago was overwhelming, but this nearly crushed me. From the Journal of Navani Kolin, Jessa Satch, 1174. Still half asleep, Shallan panicked. She scrambled off her cot, accidentally slapping the goblet of mostly drained spheres. Though she used wax to keep it in place, the SWAT knocked it free and sent spheres tumbling across her cabin. The scent of smoke was powerful. She ran to her door, disheveled, heart thumping. At least she'd fallen asleep in her clothing. She threw open the door. Three men crowded in the passageway outside, holding aloft torches, their backs to her. Torches? Sparking with flame spren dancing about the fires. Who brought open flame onto a ship? Shallan stopped in numb confusion. The shouts came from the deck above, and it seemed that the ship wasn't on fire. But who were these men? They carried axes and were focused on Yasna's cabin, which was open. Figures moved inside. In a frozen moment of horror, one threw something to the floor before the others who stepped aside to make way. A body in a thin nightgown, eyes staring sightlessly, blood blossoming from the breast. Yasna.
Be sure, one of the men said.
The other one knelt and rammed a long, thin knife right into Yasna's chest. Shallan heard it hit the wood of the floor beneath the body. Shallan screamed. One of the men spun toward her.
Hey!
It was the blunt-faced tall fellow that Yalb had called the new kid. She didn't recognize the other men. Somehow fighting through the terror and disbelief, Shallan slammed her door and threw the bolt with trembling fingers. Stormfather! Stormfather! She backed away from the door as something heavy hit the other side. They wouldn't need the axes. A few determined smashes of shoulder to door would bring it down. Shallan stumbled back against her cot, nearly slipping on the spheres rolling to and fro with the ship's motion. The narrow window near the ceiling, far too small to fit through, revealed only the dark of night outside. Shouts continued above, feet thumping on wood. Shallan trembled, still numb. Yasna.
Sword, a voice said.
Pattern, hanging on the wall beside her.
The sword.
No! Shallan screamed, hands to the sides of her head, fingers in her hair. Stormfather! She was trembling. Nightmare. It was a nightmare. It couldn't be.
Fight.
No! Shallan found herself hyperventilating as the men outside continued to ram their shoulders against her door. She was not ready for this. She was not prepared. Pattern said, sounding dissatisfied.
Lies.
I don't know how to use the lies, Shallan said. I haven't practiced.
Yes, yes. Remember the time before.
The door crunched. Dared she remember? Could she remember? A child, playing with a shimmering pattern of light. What do I do? She asked.
You need the light, Pattern said.
It sparked something deep within her memory, something prickled with barbs she dared not touch. She needed stormlight to fuel the surge binding. Shallan fell to her knees beside her cot, and without knowing exactly what she was doing, breathed in sharply. Stormlight left the spheres around her, pouring into her body, becoming a storm that raged in her veins. The cabin went dark, black as a cavern deep beneath the earth. The light began to rise from her skin like vapors off boiling water. It lit the cabin with swimming shadows. Now what? She demanded.
Shape the lie.
What did that mean? The door crunched again, cracking, a large split opening down the center. Panicked, Shallan let out a breath. Stormlight streamed from her in a cloud. She almost felt as if she could touch it. She could feel its potential. How? She demanded.
Make the truth.
That makes no sense. Shallan screamed as the door broke open. New light entered the cabin. Torchlight. Red and yellow. Hostile. The cloud of light leaped from Shallan, more stormlight streaming from her body to join it. It formed a vague, upright shape, an illuminated blur. It washed past the men through the doorway, waving appendages that could have been arms. Shallan herself, kneeling by the bed, fell into shadow. The men's eyes were drawn to the glowing shape, then blessedly they turned and gave chase. Shallan huddled against the wall, shaking. The cabin was utterly dark. Above, men screamed.
"Shallan!"
Pattern buzzed somewhere in the darkness. "Go and look," she said. "Tell me what is happening up on deck." She didn't know if he obeyed, as he made no sound when he moved. After a few deep breaths, Shallan stood up. Her legs shook, but she stood. She collected herself somewhat. This was terrible. This was awful. But nothing, nothing could compare to what she'd had to do the night her father died. She had survived that. She could survive this. These men, they would be of the same group Kabsel had been from. The assassins Yasna feared. They had finally gotten her. Oh, Yasna. Yasna was dead. Grieve later. What was Shallan going to do about armed men taking over the ship? How would she find a way out? She felt her way out into the passageway. There was a little light here from torches above on the deck. The yells she heard there grew more panicked.
"Killing," a voice suddenly said.
She jumped, though of course it was only Pattern. "What?" Shallan hissed.
"Dark man killing," Pattern said. "Sailors tied in ropes. One dead, bleeding red. I do not understand."
"Oh, Stormfather!" Above, the shouting heightened, but there was no scramble of boots on the deck, no clanging of weapons. The sailors had been captured, at least one had been killed. In the darkness, Shallan saw shaking, wiggling forms creep up from the wood around her. Fear sprang. "What of the men who chased after my image?" she asked.
"Looking in water," Pattern said.
So they thought she'd jumped overboard. Heart thumping, Shallan felt her way to Yasna's cabin, expecting at any moment to trip over the woman's corpse on the floor. She didn't. Had the men dragged it above? Shallan entered Yasna's cabin and closed the door. It wouldn't latch shut, so she pulled a box over to block it. She had to do something. She felt her way to one of Yasna's trunks, which had been thrown open by the men, its contents, clothing, scattered about. In the bottom, Shallan found the hidden drawer and pulled it open. Light suddenly bathed the cabin. The spheres were so bright they blinded Shallan for a moment and she had to look away. Pattern vibrated on the floor beside her, form shaking in worry. Shallan looked about. The small cabin was a shambles, clothing on the floor, papers strewn everywhere. The trunk with Yasna's books was gone. Too fresh to have soaked in, blood was pooled on the bed. Shallan quickly looked away. A shout suddenly sounded above, followed by a thump. The screaming grew louder. She heard Tozbeck bellow for the men to spare his wife. Almighty above! The assassins were executing the sailors one at a time. Shallan had to do something. Anything. Shallan looked back at the spheres in their false bottom, lined with black cloth. "Pattern," she said. "We're going to soul cast the bottom of the ship and sink it."
"What?"
His vibrating increased, a buzz of sound.
"Humans, humans, eat water."
"We drink it," Shallan said, "but we cannot breathe it."
"Confused," Pattern said.
"The captain and the others are captured and being executed. The best chance I can give them is chaos." Shallan placed her hands on the spheres and drew in the light with a sharp breath. She felt a fire with it inside of her, as if she were going to burst. The light was a living thing, trying to press out through the pores of her skin.
"Show me!"
she shouted, far more loudly than she'd intended. That stormlight urged her to action. "I've soul cast before. I must do it again." Stormlight puffed from her mouth as she spoke. like breath on a cold day. Pattern said anxiously. I will intercede. See.
See what?
See.
Shadesmar.
The last time she'd gone to that place, she'd nearly gotten herself killed. Only it wasn't a place. Or was it? Did it matter? She reached back through recent memory to the time when she'd last soul-cast and accidentally turned a goblet into blood. I need a truth.
You have given enough, Pattern said. Now, see.
The ship vanished. Everything popped. The walls, the furniture, it all shattered into little globes of black glass. Shallan prepared herself to fall into the ocean of those glass beads, but instead she dropped onto solid ground. She stood in a place with a black sky and a tiny, distant sun. The ground beneath her reflected light. Obsidian? Each way she turned, the ground was made of that same blackness. Nearby, the spheres, like those that would hold stormlight but dark and small, bounced to a rest on the ground. Trees like growing crystal clustered here and there. The limbs were spiky and glassy without leaves. Nearby, little lights hung in the air, flames without their candles. People, she realized. Those are each a person's mind, reflected here in the cognitive realm. Smaller ones were scattered about her feet, dozens upon dozens, but so small she almost couldn't make them out. The minds of fish? She turned around and came face to face with a creature that had a symbol for a head. Startled, she screamed and jumped back. These things, they had haunted her, they... It was Pattern. He stood tall and willowy, but slightly indistinct, translucent. The complex pattern of his head, with its sharp lines and impossible geometries, seemed to have no eyes. He stood with hands behind his back, wearing a robe that seemed too stiff to be cloth.
Go, he said. Choose.
Choose what? She said.